proposed amendments.
Do you want a motion?
Chair will entertain a motion.
I'd move House Bill 2193 to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Phillips moves House Bill 2193 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there any questions, discussions on the motion? There isn't any, clerk call roll.
Melman?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye. Okay, we have provided for us some additional information from, which I'll try to get copied for everybody and send on up to them, okay? So thank you very much. Okay, let's, which one was it, so we have Mr. Gruber here now, let's go.
2190.
2190.
Let me get my file, I think I can.
2190. What is this?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, I believe we have three sets of amendments before us, all relating to 2190. I talked to Legislative Counsel Frank Gruber to be, in particular. 2190-1, I think the most important part of this is at line 10 and 11. Failure to comply with the order of court regarding costs and expenses is punishable as contempt of court. 2190 is a bill that relates to collection of injured defense costs, and I believe that would say that if you can't pay the cost, then you'd be subject to contempt, or if you did not pay. And I believe to be held in contempt, you'd have to show inability to pay. 2192, I think Dale Penn would like to address the committee on this one, or 93 is what I have, excuse me.
Dash 3?
Yes. This relates to, no, excuse me, dash 2 is the one he'd like to talk to. This relates to district attorneys pre-screening certain offenses, and I understand that in his county they do this, and he may be able to give us some insights as to how it's going.
There's a, if you want to come up, Mr. Penn, there's a presumption, I think, in the, another presumption in the Ways and Means budget that the screening will occur, and that will anticipate some savings, and I'm, again, I'll put on the record that I'm really pleased that Ways and Means is down there making all these substantive policy decisions for us, and I'm not convinced in my own mind, maybe you can answer this, maybe I'm wrong, that the anticipated savings are as wonderful as they would anticipate them to be, and, but perhaps you would comment on what we do in this committee.
Yes, my name is Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney, representing Oregon District Attorneys Association. I have not seen dash 1 amendment. This was our bill that we submitted to allow us to recoup attorney's fees and diversions in civil compromise cases. And dash 1, as I heard it talked about, I don't think we have any objection to that. In briefly looking at dash 3 amendment, I don't believe we have any objection to that. I think that allows recovery of expenses from defendants when you're able to show that they have money to pay for their attorney. Dash 2.
Before you get, can I ask a question here?
Certainly.
I have only dash 2 and dash 3. 2190. Okay, so we did have, there was a dash 1 originally.
Yeah.
Now, is it your intent, Mr. Chair, to merge all these, or are these separate, totally separate decision items?
My guess is that we're really talking about different decision items.
Okay, thank you.
That's what I prefer to do.
Dash 2, however, is the one that relates to mandated review by district attorneys prior to filing of a major traffic citation. This was a matter that has been discussed a lot. In my county, we do this. Also in Lynn County, it is done, and in Yamhill County, it is done. Historically, there's some reasons for that that I won't go into. We have observed, at least those three offices, that there has been no benefit to, that would relate to the indigent defense fund from this review that we do. Because the number of cases that we do not file, a drunk driver, DWS, or a major traffic, is very minimal. and we're only talking about a very small number of cases. There is a budget note. This was a matter of great discussion at Ways and Means, and so consequently, we presented this, the statement that we have found that we don't believe it will impact indigent defense. However, we're willing to look at it. This will have a fiscal impact on Multnomah County District Attorney's Office and other big offices that do not do this presently. When you talk about the vast numbers of these cases, it really would require them to put people on to do this or increase their manpower, and that's a problem. Ways and Means attached a budget note to the district attorney's budget saying that we should conduct a study during the next 2 years in trying to determine how much of an impact it would have on indigent defense, looking to the idea that if it shows that there is a, that there would be a major benefit, then that should be adopted. And that is presently a budget note to our district attorney's budget. We would ask that you not pass this amendment and allow us to do some fact-finding, because I don't believe it will have any impact on indigent defense. It will have an impact on big offices and their ability to perform their job. And I believe the Ways and Means budget note will require us to present some figures and will resolve it.
Thank you, Mr. Penn. Are there questions? Okay, is there any, we've got, anyone wants to comment on any other amendments?
Could I ask who the sponsor of Dash 3 is?
Dash 3.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that also comes from the Holy Task Force, and what it does, may want to look at the bottom of page 1, lines 26 and 27, and then the top part of page 2. What it does is basically, if a person is not able to fully pay for counsel, but can pay a partial amount, then they would require that make a deposit.
My extensive notes on this bill indicate that this is where we needed to stick in some kind of criteria.
Kind of a criteria in determining indigency?
Yeah, to make some kind of a decision as to. It says immediately or otherwise pay all a part of resources. Well, how are you going to depend and what kind of status and who's going to make that decision? Is it going to be done as it is right now? The judge comes in and the person comes in and says, I can't pay. And some judges say, okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, I understand that there is a pilot project going on right now under the direction of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, where they have set forth guidelines, and I believe they are based on food stamps, and they're trying to see how they are working out. I heard, and this could be wrong, but I heard that they were using the food stamp guidelines as opposed to the ad hoc basis of the individual judge, that they're actually appointing more counsel now than they were before.
Yeah, they very well could.
I think it may be tough right now to set forth in statutory form what the guidelines are until we've got an idea of what the results.
The only thing I got is a letter from Linda Zuckerman telling us about the status, and I tried to call her yesterday, and she's going to be here tomorrow, or not around, I guess. And they're going to make a 3-month review, but they started the program in January. They're going to make a 3-month review. Well, it seemed to me they should have had that, so I'm trying to get the detail, unless this is another Justice Department.
Yeah, I asked counsel to make a copy of that letter for members, but it looked to me like it's just a study underway. Mr. Springer, do you?
I just had a chance to review that study. I don't know if they've got any information back yet. My recollection of when the task force, chaired by Representative Hooley, was meeting, the purpose of this amendment was recognition of the fact that there are two factors, according to the Zuckerman memo, which you may recall. The court looks at the indigency of the individual, and they're looking at the food stamp criteria, and then it's also necessary to survey what the costs are in the community to retain private counsel, and those are part of the pilot project. And it was found that many times, like on a DUII, even if you take the median low range. The minimum to retain an attorney, private counsel, for DUII would be in the order of $350. Rather than force a person who didn't have resources to try to come up with that money, I think the purpose of this amendment is to sort of get a little earnest money up front. And it was not, our discussion didn't go very much beyond that, but it tried to anticipate those circumstances where an individual may not be absolutely indigent, but the individual also didn't have enough money or liquidity to go out and retain a private counsel. And so it was hoped that they would be able to appoint a counsel, the person qualified, but they'd also be able to tell the person, listen, it's going to cost us $250 or whatever it's going to cost to appoint a court-appointed attorney. We want you to pay $50 or $75 or $100 up front and then sign an agreement to pay in court right away.
Well, okay, I don't, philosophically, I don't have a problem with that, but shouldn't we say then, shouldn't we mandate that the Chief Justice promulgate rules to implement the intent of the statute? Or if somebody's going to have to develop, the problem I view as the courts is there's no standard procedures out there. There's a lack of standard procedures. None. So we ought to have the court use one criteria that everybody uses so that we have some database to judge off of, or 2 years from now everybody's going to be sitting up here saying, well, I wonder what the report said.
Well, that's a point I wouldn't disagree with. I don't think we had enough time in the task force to really flesh out, or I don't recall Mr. Gruber was there perhaps, if there was any other further discussion. I guess at this point, the best response might come from the representatives of the State Court Administrator's Office in terms of what kind of authority they feel they would like to have, or how they're going to interpret this language if we go ahead and enact it. What kind of directions are they then going to transmit to the trial courts? We're going to be asking them, okay, what do we do with this?
I don't believe we had any testimony from, we haven't had any testimony really from anybody on this. In a sense, we've had, since there's no one other than the those questions, what I suppose we're going to have to do maybe is, well, let's try it this way. We've got dash one amendments, which is the contempt question. And I don't know if anybody's, can I get some sense from members where they are on that particular one? What I'd like to do is just ask you where you're at on these three amendments. I think we're going to have to get some response from the court administrator on the question of how they're going to implement dash three if we were to do that. And we can ask them that before we move on it. But what about the dash one amendments for a moment? Anybody have any feelings on that one way or the other? There was, incidentally, I have a hand engrossed version which just adds the word may on line 5. That's the proposal and hasn't been adopted. Does anyone have any opinions on this?
If I might, Mr. Chair.
Representative Phillips?
What I'm trying to do with this whole system is get a standard practice. If we allow may instead of shall, we therefore leave it up to discretion of the court to make judgments. That sounds real good on the surface. They should evaluate every case and decide what they want to do. However, if they're mandated to do something, they can, the order of the cost and expensive and some of the other things, perhaps that's where they could adjust it further. But they, I think we, if we're going to be serious about this, we've got to tell the courts we want them to do it. We're not leaving this up to your own discretion here.
Mr. Bellman?
Mr. Chair, thanks. I think the rationale, your rationale is clear. The rationale behind indigent defense, and I think the rationale behind making that permissive rather than mandatory, is that there are people who simply cannot afford to pay even the cost of an indigent defense attorney, even over a period of time scheduled by the court following, you know, following whatever procedure. And rather than lock system into a self-defeating mandatory kind of language. I think this really protects the object of indigent defense, which is to provide defense at no cost for those people who need it. That's the primary object.
Well,
Mr. Chair, could I direct a question to Mr. Penn, perhaps?
Yeah.
On the dash one amendments. Dale, I don't know if you've had a chance to see those.
I just looked at them.
Frank, do you want to come up? Be here if you wouldn't mind.
Who's the proponent on the dash one amendments? Do we have anybody identified, or did that come from this task force?
Do you recall, Mr. Gruber, where the dash one amendments emanated from?
Yes, they were not drafted by the state task force. I believe they were drafted after the question of Mark Kramer from the Senate side. How they passed the
who
originated.
I guess my question, as I read this, it goes to the civil compromise portion of the law. And I guess, as I interpret it, the court may still, in its discretion, go ahead and order a dismissal if there's a civil compromise after procedures are followed. But then it says, and I guess we're discussing, when that dismissal occurs, the court may or shall order that the defendant pay costs and expenses, which would include court-appointed counsel. Dale, I don't know how often your office gets involved in civil compromises, but do you see a likelihood that if we say that those costs shall be paid, that there would be less incentive to go to civil compromise and the possibility of more trials?
My name is Dale Penn. I'm representing Oregon District Attorney Association. I don't believe so. Our past practice before this statute was amended last session was that in civil compromises, any time there was ability to pay, we would request that before the judge would sign the order of dismissal that attorney's fees be paid. And that was done. And if someone would stand up and say and could demonstrate, well, we're indigent, we really can't pay this, then we would remove that objection to the dismissal from the court. When the statute was amended, then it took away our ability to ask for those attorney's fees. And so basically in diversion cases and civil compromises, we're saying that's fine, dismissal is fine under these facts, but you need to reimburse the system if you have any ability to pay. And that's what 2190 allows, again, is to get that money. This would allow an enforcement mechanism. I think it's a good idea. The difference between may and shall, I guess I think it'd be fairer or more fair to say may, so that there is some escape valve for the judge in those situations of true indigency.
Mr. Taylor?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Dale, I know at the first hearing I think we discussed this, but on the Fitch v. Belshar, isn't there the fact that they held someone, the lower court held someone for the payment of costs when the matter was dismissed, and that was held to be unconstitutional? How would this be distinguished in those line of cases?
Yeah, I disagree with the interpretation of that case, because that case was a finding not guilty, and as I understand it, and that was the reason that the state court administrator's office believed that this statute should be amended, was that any time there was not an adjudication of guilt, you should never require costs. But the case was when someone is exonerated, there is not a requirement of costs. It's a much different situation than if someone is coming before the court and requesting dismissal, because then that's a motion by that party, and really you're into the situation where you can require agreements, and one of those agreements is that you reimburse for costs. But that's the whole idea behind the bill.
Yeah, I have a case before me, and it says that Mr. Fitch was acquitted. Does that mean found not guilty as opposed to dismissed?
Yes, yes. And that's the whole idea, is there was feeling or opinion by the state court administrator, well, we better back off in any situation. I think that's too liberal interpretation. And it's certainly, if someone is found not guilty or acquitted, you cannot require costs. Thank you.
Is there anyone interested in moving the dash one amendments in any either form?
I would go ahead and move them with the May provision reflecting Mr. Penn's comments. Substitute for shall.
Representative Springer moves the dash one amendments to 2190. Any discussion on that? That's with the amendment. That actually is not, I guess we would move that with the amendment of May, shall the May.
May make a friendly amendment or propose a friendly amendment to the, to add that we omit the last sentence in the dash one. And let me explain the rationale for that. I'm concerned if we have someone who refuses to pay costs and expenses and it's punishable as a contempt of court, that we're going to be appointing indigent defense counsel to defend in the show cause hearing for the contempt of court. It's just one of those, you know, infinite mirror images, and I'd like to stop it right at installments on line 9.
Will the maker of the motion accept it as a friendly amendment, or?
Well, let me hear what Mr. Penn has to say.
Dale Penn, Oregon District Attorneys Association. That is a real sticky issue. If the money is required up front, it's not a problem. It's not an enforcement problem. And so you always try to require that. But if someone says, well, I can make payments, then you don't have any enforcement mechanism at all. And so you sign the dismissal, they don't pay, and then what do you do? I think that the numbers, if you just strike that last sentence, then there's going to be arguments that the statute contemplates payments and that's the way it should be done, and you know, those types of arguments. I think it's best to leave it there. If it becomes a problem in the next 2 years, I think we're really talking about a very, very small number of cases, and there may be a few where an attorney may be appointed, but I think you're really talking about a very finite group.
Just while he's up there, I've got another question.
Richard Phillips?
I'm done.
Okay. The amendments also delete on line 7 the words on payment of costs and expenses incurred.
Do you have the original bill?
So, in its discretion, order the accusatory instrument dismissed. Now, obviously, that would, if we amended it that way, that means, if I'm right, that the judge would no longer wait until everything was costed out. Is that correct? And that doesn't necessarily, that seems to go along with what you just said about removing the contempt citation. If we take that out, then there really is no hammer in the process.
Yeah, quite frankly, I hadn't noticed that what that First Amendment did, that first line, that does have an impact on the bill.
Mr. Gruber?
Well, I just wanted to point out, you've adopted this amendment to the proposed amendment already, changing the shall to the may. But that line, the court shall also order that the defendant pay costs and expenses incurred in the case, is simply a restatement of the language that is taken out earlier. In other words, I recast that requirement where under present law, it says, the statute says that the civil compromise can only be granted on payment of costs and expenses incurred. That suggests that the payment has to be made before the civil compromise can be granted. This proposed amendment was, I believe, in response to a case. I don't have the name of it. I have the citation 68 ORAP 910 in my notes here. It was several weeks ago, and I'm sorry I didn't come up prepared to talk about that. But the idea was to allow the payment over time of the costs and expenses incurred. So I deleted out the on payment of costs and expenses incurred. And which was mandatory, right, and is mandatory under current law, and I restated it back in these amendments, saying it is still mandatory that the court shall order the defendant pay these costs and expenses, and then went on to say, but they can be paid over time. So that was not a part of the amendment in there, because it was just a recasting of the existing provision.
I guess if I can just jump in here.
Excuse me, just a second. Is there a Connie Osborne here? Connie Osborne. Turn your head, Mr. Bowman.
I guess my preference would be, rather than create the contempt of court for failing to pay the fines over time, and kind of from sad experience, with some of these cases, actually, put the court in a position of I think even better leverage, because I think that a civil compromise is a real favorable way for a defendant to resolve a case, as well as, you know, something probably favorable to the victim in most of the cases where civil compromises occur. Allow the court to get in on that whole well-leveraged and happy solution, and that becomes, I guess, my rationale for voting no on the amendment, because that takes us back up to the original language, which appears to allow the court, if it wants to become a part of the agreement, to require that those costs and expenses incurred be paid before the instrument be dismissed.
Before it be dismissed. Under existing law.
Correct.
But I believe this case that I was referring to was a case in which the court of appeals has said that we can't, I'm sorry I don't have a case in front of me, and I'm hoping I'm interpreting it from recollection correctly, that cannot make the dismissal of the accusatory instrument contingent on payment beforehand of the costs and expenses, and that's why they wanted to allow it over a period of time and not make the dismissal contingent on that.
Okay, there's a motion before us. If you can recall here, Representative Stringer moved to adopt the amendments, the dash one amendments, with the change in line five to the word may. That's still a motion before us. Further discussion on the motion? Representative Bowman, you don't like the motion at all.
I'm trying to get from point A to point B, and neither.